if you're going to get an SBA 7A loan, which is what you do to acquire a business, they're going to want you, most of the lenders will want you to have a credit score at a minimum of 620, usually about 670. And you're going to need a down payment. They're going to guarantee 80% of that loan.
Wow.
So between your down payment and maybe some seller financing,
okay,
or some assumed debt, 20% of that purchase price needs to be eaten up. 5% of it needs to come from the buyer in the form of equity. Except, everybody say except. Except if you are acquiring a business in the same field that you're already operating a business.
I see.
And so if I'm a law firm buying a law firm,
right,
I can buy it with no money down.
You're listening to the Money Monopolizers Podcast, helping you take control of your financial destiny. It's about time that we invest more in our financial literacy and work towards building generational wealth. If you think you're ready to do the same, then you've come to the right place. Alex, Marlon, y'all ready? Let's get this bread.
What's good, everybody? It's Alex Camuno here, and we are back with the Money Monopolizers Podcast back in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm here with my co-host, Marlon Walls. Marlon, how you doing today, bro?
Excellent, man. This is day two being out here, man. It's going to be even a bit better crew than we had yesterday. So I'm super excited, especially for this episode we got coming up.
You said we got better guests than we had yesterday? Sheesh.
Man, it's going to be good today. I'm excited.
Yeah, saying a lot. We had some heavy hitters.
No, I know we did, man. But this is why we came out here, though.
Yeah.
Because we knew that there's so many people outside of just our immediate network, like within Houston, Dallas, San Antonio area,
yeah,
that we want to continue like to expand out. So I'm thinking like Atlanta's one area. Like we want to go like to Florida, even. Like there's so many people that we can network with just all throughout the country. So that's really our goal, man. That's why I'm excited just to continue to do this, man. Because this is how we continue to expand our network and continue to provide more perspectives outside of just our immediate circles. So that's why I'm excited. How you doing though, man?
No, I'm excited to be out here too. Again, I feel like we are on tour now, honestly, with the podcast. Just traveling now, traveling podcasts. I always heard of people doing that, and you never really think so much about, you know, what that actually is like, but you know, it's a lot, especially with equipment and like, you know, carrying all this kind of stuff. You know, if you forget anything, it's like, oh Lord,
imagine forgetting the camera when we
you gotta go buy all this new equipment. We get like, nah, we're not trying to do all that. So it's a lot that, you know, kind of goes into all of this, but it's definitely all worth it, because like you said, getting to network with so many amazing individuals in business and just people in general, man, it's podcasting is like a cheat code for networking, like we always say. So it's I'm happy to be out here, and I'm excited to get into our guests today that we have on. I'm so excited for this one. I'm not gonna get into it yet, because we're gonna get into our business updates real quick. But I'm very excited, because as y'all know, the show has kind of, we talk a lot about business and entrepreneurship and what it really means to create a business that is, you know, able to one day be sold and also be able to operate without you, because that's what, you know, we believe that's what creates value in a business, among other things. So but before we do get into all of that, I want to get into our business updates for a minute, and we can kind of get the show rock and roll after that.
It's time. I guess I got my swagger back. Keep them posted.
So, Marlon, now we are well into March, or whenever this releases. It might be April, who knows. But how have things been for you in the business recently?
Yeah, so I really want to share an experience share, because there's a lot of things that I've just learned from day to day within the business. Like as you do certain things, you notice like things about business owners. And like one thing that I started noticing a lot about when I go to other businesses, I see how they operate, and I see like their personality types of the people that are running the business, and understand more about when you are hiring somebody, you need to be hiring people that do what you don't do well. So like you may have some strengths in your business, but at the same time, you have some clear weaknesses and you need to address those. So just an example, one thing that I experienced recently was
what business are you in?
Gotta keep you remember.
So we got new listeners.
Yes, for all the new listeners, every time. To tell you about myself, I'm in a rental car business. Me and my dad started a rental car business back in 2020. We expanded our fleet over to 13 cars within last year. We currently have 10. Nope. We have more than that now. We have got two Suburbans that just came in. We got a couple more that are coming in very, very soon through joint venture partners. We're continuing to expand our fleet. And just going back to conversation, One thing I learned within the rental car business is that we have different players that we have within the industry, such as the parking lots that we park at. This, the owner of the parking lot, I was telling him that they were overcharging us like for like an extra day. And I literally, like, with the snap of a finger, this dude like almost went off on me. Bro, I'm not finna play with you. No, I don't do that. Like, I'd rather lose you as a customer. I'm not finna go back and forth about this. I'm like, man, hold on a second. I ain't want you to like go off like that. I'm trying to just like, I just let you know that I'm seeing that there's like a overcharge, but he ain't really want to talk about it. Yeah. The next time I went in there, he sent out his assistant. She was the nicest person you ever would meet in your lifetime. Very, very friendly. And she actually had pointed out that I was right.
Yeah.
At the same time. So it just shows that every business has a different person. Every person has personality types, because that was the owner of the business. And he knows that he's not very good with people. So right. What he did was hire somebody who loves people to take that spot for him, because he knows where his strengths and weaknesses are. That's kind of that was just my experience share, because I wanted to share that, because we're looking to hire people that are going to be very similar. When it comes, not necessarily similar to what she is, but more so replacing our weaknesses.
Right.
And so that's something that we're looking to do moving forward. Like, that's why we're bringing on car managers. And when we're doing our hiring process, we are interviewing for those things that we feel like we don't do as well. Especially like when it comes like to paying a close attention to detail with like cleaning the cars and stuff like that. I want somebody who's very punctual, that does everything, that's like very neat and organized when it comes to that type of stuff. Yeah.
Man, I love that though, because, you know, it goes back to that concept that we always talk about, just regarding, you know, especially when people get into business in general, they want to partner up with certain people, but people tend to partner with people based off of proximity rather than, you know, partnering with someone that fills in your weaknesses, right?
Right.
Because, you know, it's easy to partner up with a family member or a friend just because, you know, they're around. But like at the end of the day, if y'all both have the same strengths and weaknesses, then it's not going to be a complementary fit that can, you know, you can add value to each other. And so I think applying that same principle to hiring is key, especially with hiring, because now at that point, I mean, with hiring, it's you don't have to, you can be very objective, mm-hmm. as far as like selecting people. So I love that, and I think that's good that you got to see that just for that experience.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that experience. Sure, but everything's going good with the business. Otherwise, though, like, we've been continuously talking to more partners.
Yeah,
continually expanding our network. So so we're going to continue to build our fleet all throughout this year too. But we got a lot planned too, by the way, as well.
Yeah,
how's everything going for you?
Oh man, everything has been good. I mean, now at this point in the year, so okay, I'll do the same. For those that don't know or are new to the show, because when this releases, you know, hopefully at that time, we should definitely have
facts. we got coming through.
Yeah, we should definitely have an influx of new listeners. So, but yeah, for those that are new, I am in the cleaning business primarily. That is my main business, or it's my only business now. And I started that in August of 2020. And essentially the business is I match cleaners with people that need their house cleaned. So it's essentially like the Uber of house cleaning, right? I have a platform where, you know, I essentially market for cleaning jobs, and cleaners can essentially get those jobs assigned to them, and they go take care of those jobs. And then obviously I take the fee from the middle. So it's kind of like the broker, kind of a segue to what we got today.
Facts.
But yeah, it's the same kind of concept. So yeah, started that August 2020. And then first year, we were able to do $400,000 in revenue. So, you know, it was a really good year. And this year, we're hoping to do $1 million in revenue. So definitely pushing well on that front. And I definitely think we're going to be able to get that just based off of kind of how some things have been progressing. So I'm excited for that. But as of recently, you know, the business it's been really, I feel like I say this a lot every week, but it's a lot more passive now, just because now my staff, they're fully trained. They pretty much handle everything. I've literally created SOPs and systems for even handling customer disputes now. So anytime a certain type of dispute comes in via phone or email, there's an exact framework that they can follow. Obviously, you know, you have to use certain intuition to solve certain things. But for the most part, you know, we get obviously one thing I realized early on is that if you want to make a lot more money, you're gonna have a lot more problems, especially in your business. So having those systems and having that framework to handle those problems when you're small is going to be key, because when you get big, those problems are just going to be magnified if you don't have that framework set. So now that I've pretty much completed my SOPs for the most part, it's the business is literally 100%. Now, I'm not going to say 100% passive, but it is. I am very much so out of the day to day, which was my initial goal with starting it. Like, mm-hmm. like I always say, we don't start businesses to buy ourselves another job. We start them for freedom. And so once you get that point to where you can hire people, you have to do that so that you can get that freedom for yourself. So, yeah, man, just it's good to see complaints and issues come into business and see them get resolved without me. That's mm-hmm. my favorite thing, like, to see. Because in the beginning, it was like, ah, another complaint, another issue that I got to go handle. But now, nope, don't have to even worry about it. I don't even look at them anymore. And one thing I realized, too, and this is the last thing I'll say before we get into it, is that I, in the beginning when I started a business, I was always in a mindset of, like, I wanted to kind of just know about everything that was going on.
Man,
in the business.
Listen.
But oh, my God. If you really want to scale your business, number one, or if you really want to have a passive business, you have to get to a point where it's like, you have to not, I'm not going to say you don't care, but you're not going to know everything that goes on in your business. Like, man. It gets to a point where it's like, I don't even know what happened with this issue. It's, you got to, you know, bring me up to speed, whatever the case may be. So, but, you know, that's the goal. That's what we want in business.
That is learning to let your team be an extension of you. Like, they, like, imagine having, like, all your appendages. Like, you have arms and you have legs. You are just the torso and the head. Like, you have, your arm is over here. That's your manager that's taking care of all the issues. They report back to you and, like, let the full body know, like, hey, we're this is what happened today. And so now we can all be good to go. But yeah. I'm just reporting back to what's going on.
I don't even want to report. I don't even want to report.
So, but just letting the arm be the arm, yeah. And you do what you got to do as the business owner. Right, so that's the ultimate goal, though, man.
Yeah, man. I love it. I love it, and it's, you know, just to see the business in that place is super gratifying. So, I'm happy with that, and we'll kind of see how things keep pushing along. But man, that is our business updates for this week. So, like I said, we're out here in Atlanta, Georgia. As y'all know, Atlanta has a lot of heavy hitters. Now, the guest today, he's not actually from Atlanta, but we were able to catch him
right
in Atlanta. So it's like, you know, we had to take advantage of this opportunity because the guest that I've seen him on many podcasts or other podcasts before, and I know that there's so much coming for y'all today. And like I said, one thing we always try to do on this podcast is try to teach y'all how to, or show people from our experience, how to build businesses that are sellable and businesses that have value, right? Because anyone can start a business, but does your business actually have value? And that's what I think the guest today can bring the most value with, because he has a ton of experience looking at businesses, dealing with other businesses. So today on the show, we have one of the Golden Brothers, and that is not an actual, like, you know, I'm not just saying a phrase. This is actually his name. So we got Mr. Mark Golden on the show today. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate you having me here. Marlon, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah, man. We're excited to get into, you know, this episode because, like I said, this I feel like what we're going to get into today is the crux of what our show has really been about for the last, you know, 6 months to a year since we really got into our businesses, because we like to teach from our experience. And so I'm so excited to learn from you today too, because I know there's a ton of game coming. So, but usually how we want to start these episodes, before we get into all the good stuff that I know the people want to hear, I really want you to get back into your background and your upbringing with kind of how you were growing up for like 5 minutes. Talk about that for like 5 minutes, just so people, because I know a lot of people can resonate with that and they'll hear that and be like, oh man, I could do what he's doing. I can see myself doing that too. So can you kind of talk about that for 5 minutes?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Here's, for me, people say somebody's a born entrepreneur. I was not a born entrepreneur.
Man.
I was motivated into becoming an entrepreneur at a very, very early age. So my parents grew up in the South, and you know, part of their whole, the way it worked, and it's been handed down for generations, you know, at least since the end of the Civil War, is that everybody in the house contributed towards the household bills. And so I remember I went and got my first, or watched my brothers get their first jobs on a payroll. One of them summer jobs, that was a big deal. And I watched my brother, one of them, or most of them, get a paycheck for $100 and come in, and 80 of it went to the house. And I'm not knocking my parents. It's what they know,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's a fact.
And I thought, and I was the youngest. And so as the baby, we learned by doing, you know? So I said, you know what? I don't like that model. I don't want to make $100 and give 80 of it away. This doesn't make sense. And then, you know, I'm thinking from that vantage point of a child. Yes, I had food and shelter and all that. I did not care at that age. I was not wanting to give my money away. And so I quickly realized that the best thing for me to do would be to make money where everybody didn't know I had a $100 check.
Oh,
so nobody knew how much I was making.
That's
so
good. I like
no
this.
Paper routes for me. You know, no summer job. I think they called it Setco back in the day. No summer program jobs for youth. So out came the lawnmower in the summer. Out came the snow shovels in the winter. And I would go and make my money. You know, I shovel somebody's walk or driveway. And if anybody asked me how much I made, it's like, you know, I'm going to have to go back and get that. I'm going to collect it. We're still working on that. I never, ever gave a great answer. And that was good. But it was also not good because it starts a bad habit that many entrepreneurs get into, which is where they're just bringing in the money and they're living off the top line with no real understanding or accounting of what's going on. But as far as the ability to go out and do the thing,
you're right,
and make the money, that set the tone. Mm-hmm. And again, all credit to my parents because they encouraged me to go do that. They taught me how to work hard. And so they gave me those tools. And then for me at that age, they were the tax man. So I started ducking the tax man.
That's early. What I was thinking. So I was like, man, yeah. You're building a bad habit. Like, I don't want nobody to know how much I paid. So exactly. Which I made. So I'm just going to get to collect the cash and hide it somewhere.
So making the money was what I wanted to learn how to do. And, you know, that habit of chasing that income or chasing that opportunity, you know, formed the better part of the first half of my life. And, you know, about the time of your 40th birthday, you start realizing, you know, there's got to be something more than just going after that money. I still love making money. I'm not going to lie about that. But the ability to live and the ability to add value in my communities or in our churches or any place also, and in my family, also became very important. And so, you know, I'm still growing. But that is the real first part of my journey of entrepreneurship. And from there, you know, I've owned a carpet cleaning business, an advertising business, a retail and restaurant business. The retail and restaurant did not go well, but all a learning experience. So I hope that gives you an idea. But what brought me to where I am right now, I sold a business in 1998, and the second biggest check at the table went to the business broker. And I thought, I got to learn that. He had no sleepless nights, no SBA debt, right? He had no employees, you know, he had none of that. He just showed up and got a piece of the action because he brought a buyer to me.
Right.
And I thought, man, I love that. And as is with humans, I went several years and never did that.
I'm like, but you know what? Let me keep doing what I've been doing. Yeah.
But I did learn it and I did research it and I read up on it and I attended every training I could find out about it, always knowing that that's what I should do. And my daughter was young at the time. So I'm like, I got a 2-year-old. Maybe I need to do something a little safer. Maybe I need to do something a little, all silly, silly conclusions, by the way. And eventually I found business brokering and I have never looked back. It is, in my opinion, the most exciting, the most continuous educational thing that I've ever participated in, and it has the benefit of paying extremely well when you are successful. So I'm grateful for that. So I hope that somehow answers you. I hope I didn't over answer.
No.
Hope we got there.
No, that's definitely, I'm glad you got to it too, because some people, 30 minutes to get into it. So I'm glad you know you got into it. But I'm curious though, what business did you sell in 98?
In 1998, it was an advertising specialty business.
Okay.
So here's, and I hope that this helps your audience.
Yeah.
Because I was coming from a place of start where you are, and I didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So I went to Nations Bank, now Bank of America, and tried to borrow $7,000 to start my business. And they were like, hey, there's a guy who wants a business loan for $7,000. Come watch this. You know, they didn't do that, but it felt like that's what was happening. Yeah. And so I did not get the $7,000 loan. And so I started my ad specialty business. And the reason I started it, because it had all of the features that I liked in a business. I could start it with a telephone and a table and a little bit of access to the internet. That's all I had.
So did you start it with the intent that to ever sell it? Or did you start it just for cash flow, for income? Or what was your intent with it?
I had learned about exit strategies. You know, I was living in a time where the internet was new right then.
Yeah.
And so you're hearing about guys exiting and cashing out. I knew this wasn't a tech business, but I thought I could build it into something that somebody would buy.
Using the internet.
Really, now using my sales skills.
Right.
The internet was not very functional back then.
That's what I was like,
right.
Yeah.
It's 98.
Yeah.
It's
98, yeah, it was not very functional.
No, 98 was when he sold
it. Yeah, it was not very functional back then. So really, I used the internet to look up phone numbers,
okay,
to get contact names,
right,
and to do that. And then I really just smiled and dialed.
Yeah.
And which is a gift, I think, but it's also a skill that you learn and you build up. And so I did that and was able to build a business, a tool that I still use till this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it has made all the difference in my life.
And how long were you running that business for? And also, was that your first one that you had like started up?
It was not my first one.
Okay. You had the carpet cleaning?
Yeah,
I had the carpet cleaning was first.
So yeah.
Because I was wondering, like, what was the exit strategy with those in comparison?
I didn't have an exit strategy with the carpet business. So here's the deal with the carpet business. We were house parents at a children's home. My wife and I each made $11,000 a year. And that's not enough money.
Yeah.
So while the kids at this group home were at school, I needed to make money, so I went and bought a carpet cleaner and I learned how to clean carpets. And so I did that to supplement my income. And later, funny part about that is I sold the carpet cleaner to my brother Myron, and then like a year later I tried to buy it back and he's like, no, I'm not selling it back to you. I was like, yeah, but you're not using it. He's like, nope, not selling it back to you. And now this is many, many years ago. We were both still young and both still working on the thing. And so nobody was anywhere. And Myron's like, yeah, I hear you. But, and Myron's eating a sandwich. Oh, yeah. I'm not selling it back to you because you need to understand that you're smart enough to make money with your mind, not your back. And that carpet cleaner's like making it with your back. And so I'm not selling it back to you. I was like, he was right, by the way.
He was right. Yeah. No,
shout out to Myron.
Mm-hmm. No,
he was right.
Shout out to Myron.
Yeah. I told him about that last week, and I was like, I was mad at you back then, boy. I wanted to put the Ali Shuffle on you, but he was absolutely right.
Man, I love it. And it's so crazy because I'm just thinking too. It's like people think about these kinds of businesses like carpet cleaning, mm-hmm, landscaping, house cleaning, like the service based businesses, mm-hmm, right? And I think a lot of people start them with the intent of being the actual worker doing the labor,
yeah,
right? Which, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, there's honor in that. Like, it's totally fine if that's what you want to do. But I will say that it is much more gratifying to start a business, like you said, with your mind.
Yes.
And use your mind. Because that, we were talking about basketball earlier. It's just like the NBA or any type of pro athletes. Like, you can only play something for so long. If I'm relying on my physical capabilities, I can only do this for so long.
Absolutely.
But if I'm relying on my mind, I can, Warren Buffett is 89 years old. Still making more money than he's ever made.
Yes.
It's not because he's doing anything physical. It's because of his mind. And so I love that whole concept. So, but what I really want to get into is the the business brokering aspect of the thing. Because you mentioned that you saw the broker, which, by the way, did you even know that that's what, like, was like that? That was, I mean, maybe you knew that, okay, he's taking a cut, but did you know, like, the concept of brokering at that time?
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay. I did. I knew that. Before I started the first business, that was one that always appealed to me because I love business.
Really?
And I just didn't do it.
Yeah.
I said, I came from advertising. I used to sell Yellow Pages ads. That's this thing that used to exist before Google. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so I used to sell Yellow Pages ads. And I was like, well, if I can do that, I can do this. And it's all just fun work. And if I can make $2 million for them, I can certainly do better than that for me.
Right.
And so that's what I did. And so that was what led me there. But the business brokering was my first love, but I went to the one that I thought was going to pay me the most because I was still in that habit of chasing the most sensible dollar.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. Now, we'll tell you in response to your part about the solopreneur,
yeah,
mm-hmm,
the dancing elephant, those are the hardest businesses to sell.
Service-based business.
The one truck plumber,
right,
the one truck electrician, that, not knocking it, it's honorable work, like you said, but it is a difficult asset to sell. So to put your whole life into building your business into your one truck enterprise, where you're the driver of said truck.
And I want you to explain that for everybody else. So why is that so hard to sell?
Oh, man.
Okay. the primary reason is because it's a job. And everybody already has a job. And they didn't have to pay anything to get. Well, they did. They paid with their time and their life. And so the way it works is an employer knows that your time is more valuable than their money. So they'll pay you a teeny tiny bit of your money, right, for all of your time.
Right.
And that's a good deal for them. It's a bad deal for you. And so for you to look at the employer and go, no, I don't want that deal is right. But then to go out and give yourself that same deal is wrong.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's step one, though. So
right.
It's a, we can build it from there. And like you were talking about earlier, we can take ourselves off the org chart and make the investment to replace ourselves. Mm-hmm. Something even I still have to do in my business.
Yeah.
And really grow the thing so that you have a sellable, marketable asset. And you might not even end up wanting to sell it if you get really good at it.
Right. So that's where I want to go with this episode as well. So there's two ways I kind of want to take this, right? Because I think there's so much value in this conversation. Because I think when people get into business, they don't think of the whole concept of, number one, you can actually buy a business, right? So that's one way I want to kind of take this conversation. And then number two is the whole the intent of starting a business with the intent to sell it.
Exactly.
So these are two things I think are very important that people should understand. And I think it's kind of a similar conversation because, you know, I'm sure, you know, looking to buy a business, you're looking for things that you would be looking to implement if you were going to be creating a business you wanted to sell.
Right.
Right. So first of all, can you briefly mention what is actually business brokering, and then like I want to get into that whole
thing. Oh, wow. Thing. Thank you. That's a nice setup, because I was going to add a third one, if that's okay.
Okay.
For those people who can't start one because of maybe finances, money, credit, whatever, or can't buy one because of maybe finances, money, or credit, the ultimate highest entry point, in my opinion, is to actually learn how to be a business broker, because now you get to participate in the deal without having to spend your own money, put your name on any contracts, which is the ultimate form of leverage. You mentioned Buffett.
Yeah.
He's the king of leverage. And so so that is you get to be Warren Buffett and participate in deals even if you aren't writing a check. So what is business brokering? Business brokering is like being a realtor helping somebody sell their home. A business broker is the intermediary who helps people sell their business.
Right.
So you described a beautiful business, which I'll probably have to put you on my cold call list. you started the Uber of the cleaning business, and I'm like, oh man, I got. Hello, Alex. This is Mark with Family Business Advisors. Okay, so telling the truth. So a business broker does exactly that. They call owners and they say, you've got this wonderful asset. And most owners wind their assets down because they don't know that selling it is an option. If somebody showed up and wrote you a check for the ideal amount of money, what would you do next? And could you and I have a conversation about how I could help you do that? That's what a business broker does. And so then the person entrusts me to sell their business, and then I go and find a buyer, bring them a buyer, we close the deal, the entrepreneur goes off and does whatever is next, whether that's visiting grandkids and going to Hawaii or starting their next business, and the new owner comes in and runs the business and takes it to the next level, hopefully.
So you find businesses,
right.
Or do you find buyers? How would you describe it?
My clients are the business owner,
right.
The seller. That's who I am responsible to.
Okay, gotcha.
That's who I'm loyal to. That is who I have a fiduciary responsibility to. I owe them a service.
Yeah.
And then I go and find buyers, but
in
being responsible to the business owners,
right? Because
I help the buyers. I hold their hand,
right.
Walk them all the way through, and help them sometimes, whether it's writing their business plan or maybe raising their credit score, which I don't do, but I refer it out to somebody, or even helping them come up with a great way to get their down payment. That's what I do.
So I see the similarities to real estate in the sense that you are the broker for the seller, but now you're actually doing both brokering for the seller and the buyer. Unlike in real estate where you may have a seller's broker and then a seller's agent, then you have a buyer's agent. So now you have to kind of find a commonality between, split the middle ground a little bit, because the buyer doesn't want to pay necessarily top dollar, while the seller doesn't want to pay, sell it for the bottom dollar. So
buyer have their own agent?
Usually not.
Okay.
And so there's a fancy real estate term, because I'm a realtor, because a lot of these deals have real estate attached to them.
Oh, true.
the fancy real estate term is called a transactional brokerage agreement. So in the eyes of the buyer, I am a transactional broker. I filled in the blanks, I slide the paper over, sign there. And for the seller, I am still their their record, their broker or agent of record.
Right.
And so for my responsibility is to the seller, but I can still prepare some documents for you. I can still give you all the information. I'm bound by law not to conceal pertinent information from you as the buyer that could hurt you or harm you. So I can actually do that. Sometimes brokers call me, they see my listing, they say, hey, will you work with me? And I say, sure. And my rule for working with other brokers is the same as it is for taking new clients. You got to be friendly. You got to be you got to be transparent, and you got to be a lot of fun to work with. Right. So if you're not all three, if you can't check those yeah. boxes, I'm not the person for you, and that's okay. Everybody's got somebody that's the person for them.
That's a fact. No, so okay, what I want to kind of talk about then is, so some people, they're listening to this and like, okay, if I was going to, you know, I'm in a position where I could possibly buy a business, right?
Right.
So what would someone be looking for? What, how should someone be approaching like buying a business? Like what are things, or before that, what would be the benefit of buying a business versus starting a business, just from your perspective? Like in the sense of, you know, obviously a business might be a little, it's a little more turnkey of an asset, but what would be the benefit of starting one versus buying one? Or do you think it's more so just based on your situation?
Sometimes it is based on your situation, but if your situation is such that, let me go slow because, we'll light up the comments. I'm okay with that. So here's the deal.
Light them up.
The failure rate for starting businesses is incredibly high inside of that first 5 years.
Right.
And I wouldn't quote a number, but it changes every day and it's even worse.
It's getting worse.
It's about to really get worse because of inflation and the influx of free money. And so what I would tell you is if you've got if somebody said, hey, Mark, I want this person to move into your house. You got two choices. You got the person that you have to do everything for. You have to feed them, give them spending money, give them a car to drive, put gas in it, and all that. Or I've got this person that works and brings in an income. They're going to contribute to the bills. They're going to contribute. Give me the one that is an actual resource. Well, in this scenario, the one that works and can contribute is the existing business with proven track record of profits.
Right.
To be able to buy that, and to leverage 5% of the sales price. So if a business is making $1 million and all I got to do is find 50 grand and a favorable preferred SBA lender to get that $1 million business that's generating $250,000 a year, I'm doing that because I promise you the time and the money and the headaches and the heart palpitations of starting a business is so much more expensive than me scraping up 50 grand and leveraging it into that $1 million business. I got worked up. You got me fired up.
No,
guys.
So you bring a good point though, because there's a lot of things that people are going to be worried about when it comes to buying a business. Is what is the barrier to entry? Because you mentioned that they can take $50,000 but get $1 million business. So, like,
leverage.
What is it? Yeah, now you're talking about leveraging at that point. So how does that work for you?
Okay, absolutely. And semi shameless plug. Every month I do a Find Fun Flip Challenge.
Yeah.
FindFunFlipChallenge.com. Okay.
Of course.
But every month I do that and I train people on what the barriers of entry are. Here's the barriers to entry. The SBA has a moving set of criteria. Now they're going to say they don't, but they do. Sometimes they're liberal and lend money easy, and sometimes they're not. So if you're going to get an SBA 7A loan, which is what you do to acquire a business, they're going to want you, most of the lenders will want you to have a credit score at a minimum of 620, usually about 670. And you're going to need a down payment. They're going to guarantee 80% of that loan.
Wow.
So between your down payment and maybe some seller financing,
okay,
or some assumed debt, 20% of that purchase price needs to be eaten up. 5% of it needs to come from the buyer in the form of equity.
Now, they got to have skin in the game.
Yes. Right.
With the SBA.
Yes, with the SBA. Now I'm going to act like Myron and David here. Everybody, except, everybody say except. Except if you are acquiring a business in the same field that you're already operating a business.
I see.
And so if I'm a law firm buying a law firm,
right,
I can buy it with no money down.
Because you have
down.
A proven track record, at least, yes, of some sort to back to
exactly.
put your backing.
And they treat it like an expansion loan instead of an acquisition loan.
Oh, wow.
And so
it's like a merger.
It's a game changer. So you could literally go out and buy a competitive rental company or a competitive cleaning company, but there's nobody that's doing what you described because that was beautiful, man. but you could go and buy one of those and treat it as an expansion. and find the right SBA preferred lender and get that money without reaching into your pocket one time. Somebody better give me a fist pound.
Yeah. Hey, man, you're okay. Going crazy. All right.
Okay,
I got worked out.
No, I love it. So this is I love this whole thing because I don't think most people don't really even know about SBA loans, I think, in general. Like, for the fact that you can actually buy business and look at, you can leverage business. And I think a lot of people get caught up so much on the down payment or the money they need. But I don't think they realize, I think building a business is a lot more work and a lot more effort and a lot more time than trying to find 50 grand. Because, so you said they require you to have this skin in the game. Now, mm-hmm. Does that mean, like, okay, I can't go do a private loan or something like that? Or, does that have to come, like, they check in my bank account?
And see if it's
like,
just coming from directly from you.
Man, I tell you what, I can hang out with y'all all day every day. Because y'all ask the best questions and the important ones. Okay, so remember that crazy, stupid thing people used to say, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever, you know? Yeah. It's like you're only six people away from knowing Kevin Bacon. Let me just tell you something. You're like 2 or 3 degrees away from a $50,000 to $100,000 investment, right? It is just a phone call to a guy. Here's what I know about people with resources. They love good ideas that return unto them.
Yeah.
So here's what you can do in the SBA. You know a wealthy person who loves the idea of the business you want to buy. Right. They want to participate, but they don't want to get caught up in being on a loan document with you. They don't want to go through the SBA process with you. They just want to write a check and say, hey, bring me home some like-minded, get my kids out the street, rake it in, right? So that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. You can actually get an investor to join you in ownership of your business as long as it does not exceed 20%. They don't have to go on the SBA loan. Oh. So that's one thing you can do. You can get an investor. You can also do what you do when you buy get an FHA loan. You can get a gift letter.
Yeah.
You know, I, Mark, rich Uncle Henry, I don't have one, but am giving Mark $150,000 to put towards his $1.5 or $2 million.
And would that count as your 5%?
Yeah. Wow. The gift letter counts as my 5%.
Right.
And so now all I got to do is get somebody excited about what I'm buying.
Right.
If you can't get the smart, rich people you know excited about what you're buying, you are buying the wrong thing.
Right.
Right. And so because they're telling you they've been there. And so they're like, hey, you know, I understand that you want to buy the petting zoo that only has eagles in it. and I'm for that. But I can't give you my $100,000 because I just can't see how it's going to work. You know, and so if the rich person gives you their feedback, open your ears, hear it, even if it doesn't feel good to hear. I'm sorry, I'm getting worked up.
No. Get worked up. This is good. Because what essentially I'm hearing is that, I mean, look, I'm big on like eliminating excuses for people. And I totally understand finances, whatever, that could be like an issue for a lot of people. But if you're telling me all I need to do is convince someone and all I got to do is find an investor, that is, I promise, doable for anybody. Because a lot of people don't, we talk a lot about real estate on the show. We get into a lot. Real estate, we've done plenty of deals using not a dime of our own money. Real estate is essentially business in the same sense, especially if we're talking commercial real estate, because it's valued based off of income, which that's how businesses are evaluated as well. So it's like, if I can find a way to buy real estate with none of my own money, I can find a way to buy a business with none of my own money.
100%. Even strangers will give you money for something that makes sense.
We've done that before real estate. Yeah. It's the same thing.
Same exact thing. And here's why I like business ownership. Now, I've invested in real estate a lot over the years. And so I love it. I get it. I totally get it. But one of the things that I know about investing, if you're going to make an investment, you need to know what your goal is, right? And so I simplify it like this. I have one of two goals. I'm either accomplishing growth or I'm accomplishing income.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Very rarely can you get both from the same vehicle.
Mm. Really?
Except, everybody say except.
Business, right.
Except when you're buying a business. Right. So if I go buy that. That $1 million business is paying me $250,000 per year.
Right.
I'm getting income, and now I own it, so I can pour some brain power on that thing, right? And now it's a $2 million business in no time at all.
Right?
Because maybe I answer the phone better. Maybe I add a salesperson. Maybe I make it easier for people to find me. And so all of a sudden, I've just doubled the top line and maybe upped the bottom line by 60 to 70%. And now I've got growth and I was making the income the whole time.
Right.
And so that's the magic investment vehicle, which is why you mentioned him, Mr. Buffett. That's why he invests in businesses like you guys. Can I just throw one more thing in there?
Throw it in, man.
Let's get into it.
Okay. The reason I said the third thing to do is to become a business broker is because if you become a business broker, you got a solid commission coming when a deal closes, right? I mean, a nice one if you're
right.
If you're selling profitable businesses. So what if the buyer needed 50 grand and I got 100 grand commission coming and I say, you know what? You can take my commission as the down payment. The banks are cool with it. The seller's certainly cool with it. The buyer is cool with it. And now I got 19% of this business. I haven't done anything for it.
You see the value of the business right now.
Yes. Yes. And so now I get to participate. And so no longer can somebody use the excuse, I don't have the money, I don't have the credit, because as the business broker, nobody asked you for any of that.
Yeah.
And so if you can hear this, you can participate in deal making. And that's what I try to tell people. I said, don't limit yourself. Be a deal maker. All right, let me get, I'm going to calm down now. This is your show.
No.
And I'm sorry. See, y'all put me in the middle and I got the big one. I'm acting like Russell Westbrook over here taking all the shots. Sorry, Russ.
Okay. No, man. That's why we brought you on, man. He's cooking. And this is, I love, have you done that yourself?
Like I just did that this week.
Really?
Did that this week. Yes.
I think I heard you yesterday at David's Social Proof 7.
Yes.
You mentioned that you were like buying each, like every 10th.
Every 9th or 10th one. Ninth. Yes. Wow. I'm going in.
For this
and
reason,
so,
right?
And so, yeah. And David said, well, you didn't tell me that when you were. I said, well, because I wasn't doing it. And see, that's the thing. Here's what I love and don't love about the access to wonderful business knowledge is because a lot of people give out great business knowledge, but I want to be like you guys, my heroes, and give out business knowledge that help people out where they are.
Right.
Right? And so I always have to pretend that I am talking to someone that has no money and no credit because I've been in both of those places. I have spent time That's on good. Every rung of the economic food chain.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm talking to that person at all times. And so David said, hey, you didn't mention that one. I said, you know why I didn't mention it? Because, well, I wasn't doing it. I had to get to that place to where I could actually do that.
That's very true.
And so, you know, I'm not presenting myself as some person who has arrived. I'm not Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
But as the money keeps increasing, I have to find smart things to do with it.
Right.
And what a great way to do it. By the way, when I use that as that investment, I don't have to pay income tax on it right away.
Because
it never even touches my bank account. You
right.
know what I mean?
So it goes straight to them.
Yes. Because you're bringing in income, now you're just investing right into something else. So now that's actually a way for you to get your return on investment as well.
Exactly.
And equity in that business now.
The ultimate management of the second most renewable energy source on the planet.
Wow, man.
Somebody say, what's the first?
Right, what's the
first? Okay, come on, man. What's Don't race ahead of me. No, okay, the first is wisdom and the ability to get knowledge. And so, you know, I told you I talk about the Bible sometime. I won't try to convert anybody because that's not the goal here. But one of my favorite Bible verses is, it talks about it. It says, be not conformed. I like to call that the formal education trap. But be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. almost fell out of my chair. I do love it, right? And so here's the deal. The renewing of your mind is available to all of us. And so just because I don't know how to do deals today, how long do I want that to be my story? Because I can access it with a Google search and fix
Facts,
that.
Man.
You can know everything I know about the SBA by Monday. Go to SBA.gov, read it. And so that's where I get excited. And so the most renewable energy source on the planet is just wisdom, making the decision that what they gave me when they handed me my diploma was not the end, but
that's
the beginning.
Man,
and so the good. Being conformed, see what I did there? being not conformed, but transformed, it is totally in your power. And if we can get the transform attitude, my strategies and tactics get easier for you. But if I give you my strategies and tactics and you treat them and conform yourself, well, Mark said this, I'm only doing this. No,
right.
Add to it. Okay, Now let me calm down. I'm gonna give these guys the show back. I'm never getting invited again. So I gotta get it out. Next, yo, I'm gonna be like Russ on the second row in my suit because I shot too much. Sorry, Bron, it's all yours.
So, man, I think that what you just pointed out right there was very critical, though, because a lot of people are always looking for the tactics and the strategies. People are just wanting to start saying, just tell me the steps in order to accomplish this. But what's going to happen is that you're going to give them those exact steps. They're going to go down. They're going to hit a roadblock and be like, I don't know what to do next, because they ain't never had the transformation in the process of understanding that this is you are becoming a problem solver in the sense of getting these strategies. You also need to know how to solve future problems, because I can walk you through everything and hold your hand, but at some point I got to let you go and you got to be on your own. And what are you going to do then?
Exactly. You know how many times I tell people, people that I'm training to be business brokers, say, well, what's the secret? How do I get listings? Because that's how you build the business. Call some people and ask them. Yeah, but I'm not good on the phone. Yeah, but they're not gonna. Will they really take my call even though they're the big CEO? And so they're bringing their old
beliefs.
You can't put new wine into old vessels, right?
Right. Ooh,
and so they're coming in with the old vessel, and I'm like, hey, I want to give you the new wine. I got it. It's right here. But could you just run out and get you a new vessel so that everything that none of what we give you gets wasted.
Right.
And I think that when we think of our minds like that as a place to harvest wisdom, so bringing it in and growing it, if we can think of our minds that way, there's nothing we can't do in business. Like, I'm still trying to get my head around your Uber of the cleaning business. And like, it's the most amazing thing that I've ever heard. And I'm like, as much fun as I'm having here, I can't wait to go and like research the idea and read up on it. Because I'm like, you know, I want to be on Shark Tank one day because maybe I invested in that or something. I don't know. But yeah. So anyways, that's how I feel about that renewable energy source.
So I wanted to talk about that, like going into that part, Dan, because this is something that me and Alex have been talking about a lot, especially with the cleaning business as it's become more established for them. When is the right time to sell a business, or is there a right time, or like, how do you know what those signs are for somebody who has been in business, they've automated things, and now they're looking for the next phase in life?
That is a great question. And you know, the answer is different for everybody. You know, I can speak for the background that I come from. And so the businesses that I've owned, I've had to sell them in order to be able to position myself to take a better next opportunity. Mm-hmm. I've not been to date in position where I can keep the business I own and go take advantage of the next opportunity, because the business I own houses the wealth. And so I think the thing is if you start off from the beginning counting well, yep, and you know, keeping good financials and good books, and let it tell the story, and don't ignore the bad years, because the good years are coming, and people need to see that. And I think the right time to sell is when what is next is more valuable to you than what you're doing right now. And so, like, Jesus did not become the Savior until he stopped being the carpenter, right?
You've
got to let go of this wrong. Right, to reach up and grab the next rung. So don't fall in love with being the CEO of this business because you found something that works. If your calling is taking you past that, well, then use your business as leverage to go do the next thing.
That is the whole key with everything, man, because I always say this, everything that you are doing in life, everything has a season. And so one season may be closing, but that means it may have been propelling you to the next season of life.
Yes.
But you can't get to that next season if you are holding on to this previous season, and you have to know when it's time to let it go. That's why I love you said don't be attached to it, because this is nothing but your propeller to get to the next phase of life.
100%. That's Confucius. That's not even me. All sorrow is caused by attachment. And so it's like, here's the deal. Somewhere in a garage in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, still are my dad's tools from his plumbing business.
Wow.
There was a time when the phone rang off the hook and everybody wanted what he had, right? And that happens for a lot of people in their business. At some point, you're doing the world a service by giving the mission to somebody who can take it further.
Yeah. And that's what I was envisioning too, yeah.
Like, here's my challenge. You guys challenged me in your opening. I don't know if you know this. Like, I got a business and it's doing well and I'm happy and thank you, Jesus. I got to take Mark off the org chart. I got to make, I'm the rainmaker.
Yeah.
I need to go hire a rainmaker.
Wow.
Right? And that's scary because in my mind, nobody can make rain like I do. You know what I mean?
That's the hardest part.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I got to get over that and I got to let go of this rung and reach up and I got to go pay for a rainmaker.
Yeah.
And paying for a rainmaker changes a lot for people. Yes. And so that's what I got to do. You guys challenged me. You didn't even know you were challenging me. You're talking about taking yourself out of your business. And you're talking about, I think maybe we weren't even recording yet. You're talking about, yeah, man, it's nice knowing that problems are getting solved and yeah, I'm not a part of the solution.
Facts.
I'm like, you didn't tell me you're going to bring me to Atlanta to make me cry. My goodness, man. No wonder I'm taking all the shots. All right, go ahead.
And that is one of my concerns, though, because one thing that I was always thinking about when somebody has started a business, I feel like they can either reach a ceiling at some point or they're going to just go, if they don't exit when the time is right, it's going to decline at some point, and then because they're going to outgrow it or they're going to just stop wanting to do it after a while, even if they, it is a little bit more passive. But
motivation,
if you're
wanes,
not continuously pushing it forward, it's going to inevitably going to start dying off. I think one thing, as your brother Myron says, anything left to itself is going to eventually move further and further to like decay
towards disorder.
Towards disorder, yeah. Exactly. And so if you're not, so that's why it's so valuable to give it to somebody else who's who has the vision to continue to, yes, push it. And I think that is something that's critical for,
well,
a lot of people.
And you're, here's what we get as regular everyday people, we get the leftovers from Harvard, Stanford, and Princeton. Because at Harvard, Stanford, and Princeton, 50 zillion years ago, they used to teach the four stages of business, you know, which is a startup, growth, maturity, decline. We won't teach that anymore.
Right.
Because it's not true. It's startup, growth, maturity, transformation. And we're still stuck with those leftovers from 50 years ago. And transformation is real. And sometimes you even skip maturity and go right to transformation, mm-hmm, because that's when these companies are bringing on investors or selling to a better operator.
Right.
And when you sell to a better operator, you can sell them 80%. You can stay in for the awesome,
true,
growth they're going to take on.
Yeah.
But we just have to, let our ego go and know that all
huge,
the answers,
man,
don't have to come from us. And that's not easy when it's something you've built.
Right.
I think that's the toughest part. What I want to get into real quick, though, I want to really, let me see, how should I say this? For someone that is thinking, okay, you know, they just feel like they have to start a business, right? They, mm-hmm, want to start a business. They want, mm-hmm, to, you know, be the one that takes it from, you know, this point to this point. They don't want to inherit or buy a business, right? Which,
right,
is fine. What actually, in your experience, makes a business a valuable business if you were going to like start them? Like, what should people be actually looking to do? Like, based on what you've seen, hundreds of businesses sell for top dollar. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen businesses sell for, you know, bottom dollar too.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was the difference between those businesses that sold for, facts, top dollar and the ones that didn't? Like, for the mindset of someone starting a business, what should they be looking at?
And I'm going to make a tech space exception, at least for now. Customer growth and customer acquisition. You got people wanting what this business produces or the service that they offer. And the business has the ability to acquire them, lock them in, and keep them. You know, and if it's a repeat business, all the better. That's the thing. And most businesses fail or die because they're not good at acquiring customers. And so if I'm a CPA and I start a CPA firm, but I'm not good at getting people, I'm the best tax guy, the best whatever, but I can't get people to come through the door, then I'm dead in the water. And so I think customer acquisition and having a system for customer acquisition that works is the secret sauce. And the more duplicatable your customer acquisition process,
man,
is, the easier it is to sell that business. Profits, profits, profits is plugged into the margins, everybody. So that's a big deal too. But customer acquisition. If you're not growing your customer base, in fact, if your customer acquisition is on decline, you know, I've seen SBA loans get turned down on profitable businesses because they're in decline.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
At very profitable business. Business is making $2 and $3 million. It's like, yeah, you're making $2 or $3 million, but you made $4 to $6 million last year. What's going on? And so they'll pull the plug. So decline because,
wow,
that moving towards disorder,
yeah,
the lenders see it happening. And they're like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And so that's why Mark Zuckerberg was crying when they had their all staff meeting, right, because they're losing all those advertisers, you know? Because fantastic entrepreneurs like you are showing people that we don't need a they to get our message out there. We can be the they. And so in his business, it's wrecking their growth and their customer acquisition.
So I love that too. And I think I was reading, I don't know if you heard of a book called Decoupling the Customer Value Chain by it kind of talks about, you know, so how some of the businesses have, startup businesses have taken down some, you know, have beaten some of like the big business, big industries, right? So obviously Uber, Lyft, Airbnb, they haven't necessarily destroyed those industries they were competing against, but they took a good portion of the market share.
They did.
Right? And they, a lot of that, obviously through, so they talk about this concept of decoupling the customer value chain, right? So obviously every customer goes through a step from the time they get the idea of they want this thing to the time where this thing is now to their door. Like there's steps that every single thing is a step. So as a business owner, the people the people that can essentially come and disrupt industries, as they call it, are the people that can make those steps, either help the customer conserve money, time, effort, or any of the three, or all of the three, right? And so that's kind of what Uber and Lyft did. Yep. And one thing that they mentioned a lot was that no matter what, the in the beginning, the most important thing is getting like your first 1,000 customers, right? Mm-hmm. As a startup, it's just getting to that first 1,000. Because once you get to the first 1,000, it's a proven model.
It's a wrap.
And then now it's scalable.
Yes.
I know I can scale it, right? And you have to do some things that might not be scalable initially to get to that first 1,000, but eventually you get to a point where I can't scale that. So based on your experience, you've seen that for everyone, that if someone was starting a business, that the number one thing they need to focus on is just getting customers.
And keeping them, yes.
And keeping them.
Mm-hmm. Customer retention, customer acquisition.
Yes.
Acquisition,
in fact,
retention.
Keeping them is even cheaper than getting them.
Right.
And it also enhances the growth rate. So it's such a simple thing. And it's so funny that a lot of people become entrepreneurs and that's the part that they hate the absolute most. And then in those cases, they should probably hire that. Like your guy that came out to talk to you about the parking lot problem.
He told me he'd rather lose a customer.
Yeah. And that's insane. It's just because he doesn't know any better.
Right.
Yeah. He just doesn't know.
Right. 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 So customer growth. Okay. Is there anything else that is like, okay, you know, this is a good thing to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Orderly books.
Okay.
I mean, I can't stress that enough. You know, tax returns and financials that corroborate each other. And a lot of smaller entrepreneurs are like, oh, yeah, it says that I make that, but I really make that. Let me show you in my garage how much extra money I got. You can't pay for that unreported income.
You got to be bankable.
Yes, you got to be bankable. So put it on the books. Do not. Here's the thing. If you're giving yourself a $1 advantage this year, but it's going to cost you $20 the year after next when you go to sell your business, forget about your stupid $1 advantage, right? Because, you know, yeah, I showed the tax man. No, you didn't. You hosed yourself. Because now I'm bringing a buyer to you, and your business could be selling for 2 to 5, 4 to 5 times what it can sell for now because you didn't report some income. Mm-hmm. So I would say take the hit, pay the tax man, go make sure that your business is always as valuable as it is supposed to be.
That is truly starting with the end in mind, because if you know that you're looking to sell this business off, you don't want to be selling a business that's netting zero.
Exactly.
You know, where you pay, I got the tax man, I had to pay anything in taxes. Well, you'll be staying with this business for another few years.
Until don't try to fix it in 1 year, because people are smarter than you think they are. Yeah, they're like, hey, wait a minute, you used to make nothing, and now you make $800,000 a year.
Right.
It's not believable.
Yeah.
So that would be, I just say, grow those customers and let the financials support your story. Definitely. And anything that is not a good part of the story, just talk about it early. You know, I think the big mistake that sellers make is when they should reveal, they decide to conceal. They're like, well, you know, I got this one part of my business that's not as pretty as I'd like it to be. I'm just going to cover it up. Mm-hmm. And so when buyers or lenders find it, it ends up killing an entire deal. Whereas if they'd have mentioned it in the beginning and talked about how they're fixing it, it'd have been a non-issue.
Right.
I can see that being a problem for a lot of people, because they want to make sure it's at premium value. But is it okay to like have a hole and just like being transparent?
Yes, please. Absolutely. Think of it like this. Now, y'all are young men. I don't know if you're single or not, but I'm going to assume if you're single.
I am.
Okay. Let's say you go out. You want to put your number up on the screen? I'm just kidding. You go out and you meet somebody, right?
Okay.
And they tell you, you meet them, and they tell you that they're from your hometown and that they went to your college,
okay,
and that they like all the same things that you do, up to and including ice cream and nice meals.
It's Miss Perfection.
Yeah. And then you go out to eat with them, and you ordered a nice meal and the ice cream. Yeah, I don't like that. You're like, well, wait a minute. This is the same ice cream they served back in the cafe at our old college. Yeah, about that. I only went there for 3 weeks. And so you know what I mean? And so all of a sudden, right, now you feel worse about her. If she'd have just told you, oh, I went to your college for 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, no, I've had that ice cream, but I'm not crazy about it. If she'd just done that up front, you guys might have a future. Right. But because she tried to okey-doke you,
right,
now you're like, most of what comes out of that mouth in the future is not going to be believable.
Right.
That's facts, exactly, man, the way it works in the buyer-seller relationship.
Oh, man.
I love it.
Okay, so I want to ask you how, because I think that a lot of people don't think so much about, like, Marlon was mentioning, like, you can get to a point where you can lose motivation in your business, right? Mm-hmm. And you can kind of just let it die out versus actually trying to sell your business at some point when it is at its peak, probably, or even, you know,
at the peak that you want
to
put it
at the peak you could have brought it to, right? And so I want to ask, how are businesses actually, like, evaluated, or just on a straight up, like, how do they appraise, like, just, I guess, on a high level, what are the things that they're looking at the most? I know you mentioned customer growth, but because I know, obviously, with real estate, commercial real estate specifically, businesses are apartment complex is essentially a business, mm-hmm, right? And it's the value of the apartment complex is based off of, you know, the cap rate, all those kinds of things, but that's based off of the net operating
income. Correct.
Right.
Right. So that is essentially how businesses are evaluated in that act. Is it the 100%. Same thing for just general businesses?
Yes, absolutely. So me talking about growth rate, that's what, and customer growth, that's what makes a business desirable and bankable. Mm-hmm. But the thing, the foundation is the income. And so, like, there's what it's based on is what's happened in the past, what's reasonable and customary. Every year, there's a couple of publications that's put out that talks about every business that got sold in every arena. And so they say this business was sold at a multiple of 3x earnings or 5x earnings. And so it is always going to be a multiple of the earnings type of the industry that you're in. And that just exists out there. Now, I have those publications and those tools and valuation tools, and that's what we use, except for in industries where somebody's breaking the mold. So, like, you know, you think I'm teasing you, I'm not, about your awesome business. You're breaking the mold.
Yeah.
And so I can't just go to a book and go, well, this is what it's worth, because it's not just a cleaning business.
Okay.
Right? You know, it's literally a technology business, you know. It's a media business, it's an advertising business. And so I think that there's a valuation code. Most businesses it's going to be 2 to 3x earnings, but there are certain industries where that earnings multiple is exceptional.
Wow.
And tech is one of them.
Right. And then it's like insurance, another one.
Insurance is another one. An insurance company is really a very high multiple. Insurance agencies can be. It just depends on where it's at and what's going on with the laws in the state where they're operating.
So I want to ask you something, and you know, we can kind of ballpark this, right? But my business, right? If I was to potentially sell it, I can kind of, what information could I give you, like, right now? That would be like, you can give me a ballpark, like, you know, just a range. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's my job. Hey, I can't get any listings if I can't do that, because it's the first question I get asked when I go see someone or even do a Zoom or whatever. What's my business worth?
Right, right.
And so, you know, and I'll tell you what I asked them, but you don't have to answer this. You know, I say, in a perfect world, you know, in an ideal situation, if you could decide what the number is, what offer could someone make to you that would make you go, okay, yeah, I would sell for that. Now, you don't have to answer that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put you on blast. And you have something really special, and I don't want a future buyer using what you say against you.
Yeah.
All right. So that's what I always ask in response to that. Usually what I would ask you is about the tool that brings those two parties together, right? Because that's really what you're doing, and that's always a valuable business to sell, where you're bringing two parties together. And then I would ask you about your profits, And I would ask you about your projected profits. And, you know, I'd ask you about your past ones. But, and so, like, let's just say, and I'll use fictitious numbers because I do not want your business on blast.
Okay. That's cool.
Because what I'm making my work hard when I call and I get you as a listing if I put you on blast. So we're not going to do that. But what I would tell you is, let's just say, I'm going to pull a number out of the air. Let's just say that you had a net profit of $190,000 last year. I just throw that number out there. Yeah. It might not be rooted in anything. But it's a technology business. It is also a connecting business where you're providing a platform for like-minded people to connect. I think at $190,000, we'd probably sell it for about $1.5 million.
Wow. Yeah. So that's almost a 10x multiple.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Without batting an eye. Because what you can also put into that on top of those profits are things that you spend on yourself out of the business that are allowable seller discretionary earnings, whether it's personal insurance for yourself,
yep,
or maybe a vehicle or your internet or your cell phone. You know, I'm just, those are just some, your professional services fees for your accountant and your lawyer. Yeah. So those are all things that can be added on top of the profits. So then we do a multiple of that. And so this is from the sounds of it. Whereas a cleaning business, this is a 2 to 3 time multiple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all, so it may be maybe $500-600 grand. But this is more than just a cleaning business.
Right.
And so that's where I get excited about it.
Okay. Yeah. And that was,
let's talk about it.
Yeah. We'll definitely talk offline.
Facts.
But no, that's, I wanted to talk about that because I always told people, and Marlon, you've heard me say this, like, I don't tell people that I have a cleaning business. I say it's more so a marketing business. It's a marketing company. That's the, from a higher level, because I don't own any, I don't have any employees, don't have any equipment, don't have any, you know, high overhead things. It's strict, I can run it off of this if I really want to. And so it's a very kind of high level thing. And so hearing that is definitely, you know, giving me a lot more perspective on it, because it always made, intuitively, it just, I know, like you said before, cleaning. So, I mean, my mind is just running now. But if someone was running just a straight up cleaning business with just employees and equipment and vehicles and things like that, that you're saying that one, even if it's like multiple employees and it's not like a solopreneur thing, that's a 2 to 3 multiple.
Yes, and if we wanted to make the case to make it worth more, we'd have to peel back the onion and look at their client base,
right,
look at the contracts they have in place, and, you know, and see what they're cleaning and what, right, the relationship is. But as a typical run of the mill, yeah, it's probably going to be two to three multiple on a, which is not bad. Right. For a business that, you know, people can literally start where they are, that's still, they're still creating wealth for themselves.
Facts.
They're still, you know, creating an appreciating asset for themselves. So it's quite wonderful what you can do in this country if you have an idea and a willingness to roll up your sleeves.
Facts.
And risk failing.
Yeah.
And so I'm not against starting businesses. I'm just telling you that if you want to get there sooner, if you have fewer years left, you know, I got my 11,000 days in front of me, maybe. I need to buy them where they're already running.
That's facts, man.
I love it. I love it. Man, I love it. I love it. I love it. So, well, Marlon, did you have some of you?
No, this has been a pleasure to have you on.
I appreciate you guys having me. I mean, because this helps people understand.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal.
And when people show up, like, people come to my challenge every month, and I like it when they get there and they have an idea that there are multiple options. When they show up going, I'm going to listen to Mark for a week, and I'm going to be the world's biggest mover and shaker, I'm going to go buy 10 businesses next week. They're not being realistic with,
right,
themselves. But they're going to say, hey, Mark's going to look at me, and we're going to talk about where I am. And at the end of this week, I will know if I need to buy a business, sell the one I have, or just look for a way to be a facilitator so I can amass enough money to do that. And those are the opportunities I give people. But being with you guys helps me explain that proposition even better.
This has been very helpful. And what's the name of that challenge again for?
It's the findfundflipchallenge.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one every month. I have them every month. There's one every month, and it's 2 hours a day, 1 hour of Q&A, and the other hour of training. And it's absolutely something that will, by the end of the week, you will already have taken steps to be a deal maker. And so I'm glad that y'all, because y'all are media moguls, and I got to talk about my business in front of media moguls audience. It doesn't get any better than this, man. I'm living the life. Thank you.
Oh, for sure.
We're definitely going to help you promote that, man. Yeah. We have a link for it in the show notes, definitely.
Yeah. Excellent.
So what we want to do to wrap up the show is our last segment, which is going to be, we call it the Fast Five. So this is where we'll just ask you five questions. You answer them in 10 seconds or less.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome to the Fast Five.
So...
10 seconds or less. You each don't one. Know, right? Each when Camille and I were, I'm sorry. Let me quit. That's not funny. Y'all gonna have to cut that. Problem. I don't care.
She go ahead. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna take the first one. We'll alternate. First question: what does success mean to you?
To me,
yep.
Success to me means that you are living within your purpose and loving the people that you are assigned to love with everything you've got.
I love it, man. Very thought out. Question number two, what is your favorite money or business book?
Oh, my favorite money book is Boss Moves by Myron Golden.
That's a great, yeah.
And if you disqualify that one, I'm going to tell you it's Starting on a Shoestring, and that's written in 1993 by a guy named Goldberg. It might be Allen. Don't get me wrong, but Starting on a Shoestring. Everyone should own it if you plan on buying businesses.
Really? Okay. Check that one out.
Gotcha. Okay. Third question. Would you rather have $1,000 a week for life or $1 million today, and why?
I would take the $1 million today because of what I know how to do. With that million, will get me more than $1,000 a week for life, probably starting Monday. So you know, and I don't like to talk about strategies that I don't recommend for everyone, but I can honestly take $1 million and write covered calls from now until the cows come home. And have money racing through my door, kicking my door down, jumping into my pocket.
Yo, oh, okay.
Love the perspective, man. That's wisdom, right? That's that wisdom you were talking about earlier. For sure.
It's a renewable resource.
Yes.
And it's not because I'm awesome. It's because I know how to use Google. Yeah. You know, it's because I know how to read a book and go to the library and bookstore. Right. So I get excited about that.
Love it. All right, question number four. If you could go back and change anything about your journey, what would it be?
I would appreciate the gifts that God gave me sooner. And when I say appreciate, I'm not like, oh yeah, I'm good at that. No. Appreciating the gifts that God gave you that shows up in your actions. And if I could, I'd have done what you guys did. I would immediately gone into full tilt entrepreneur and not jumped onto people's payrolls. I would have jumped onto Mark's payroll.
Wow.
And so that is the ultimate sign of belief, because when the manna is given to you by God, I don't need to step over the manna to go and fill out job applications.
Ooh. Wow. Take your time, Pastor.
That's all right. Somebody give me some help.
Preacher, man, y'all saying amen right now.
Oh, for sure, man. I love it. So last question, where can people find out more about you?
If you want to find out more about me, you can find me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is OwnershipU. There's no dashes, no periods. And I never send you DMs asking for anything. So, because you know, the copy game is real. By the way, that's a game put out there by Facebook. They could eliminate those bad actors, but they don't want their users to go down. See what I mean? And so that's a little shiestiness. I'm calling you out, Facebook.
Wow.
So I hope y'all don't get in trouble for me saying that. But they can find me on Instagram. They can find me on TikTok. I'm also OwnershipU. And then if you have a business to sell, MergerUS, MergerUS.com.
Yes, sir.
So any of those are good ways to find me. And, you know, I'm accessible. Call me, DM me. And I just want to help you. You don't have to do any business with me. If you think I can help you, hit me up and let me. That was my 10 seconds.
It usually goes more. About 11. Yeah, okay.
You know I do like you, Mark. I'm always looking out for you. I'm always looking out. Well, you know, Paw went a little over. You know, he talks slow.
No, for sure. Man, this has been a treat. Absolutely fantastic episode. I knew it was going to be great, but this was even better than I imagined. So,
facts.
We appreciate you coming on the show, man. And we can't wait. We definitely going to bring you back at some point.
This is a complete honor and one of the greatest opportunities of my adult life is sitting here visiting with you guys.
Wow.
Because I know the people that plug into you all for real help. And so I hope if just one person can get something out of something that I shared, then I consider myself blessed. So thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity.
Wow. Yes, sir. There you all have it. Well, that is it for this episode of the Money Monopolizers podcast. New episodes will be released every Thursday and will be available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Just search Money Monopolizers or wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd appreciate it if you rated us 5 stars and left us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find out more info about us on IG at Money Monopolizers or on Twitter at The Monopolizers. We post informative content on there to keep you engaged. So be sure to check that out and share those posts. But until then, we are out of here.
That was an excellent
one. You guys are fun.
You've been listening to the Money Monopolizers podcast, helping you take control of your financial destiny. To learn more about how you can be in control of your money, visit moneymonopolizers.com. We'll catch you next time when Alex and Marlon share more personal finance and wealth creation tips with you. Now it's time to take action.